Hello, and welcome to Max XP for RPGs, the podcast where I talk about RPGs, but also whatever else I want. I'm a little bit annoyed because I could have sworn I recorded this one. In fact, I remember recording it like three or four times with my previous application that I recorded with, and every single time something would go wrong, it would break, and I thought I had recorded it just through Anchor specifically. Apparently I did not, because I went looking through my podcasts as I was just kind of piecing together like little videos for them, and I couldn't find it, and I'm like, wait, what the heck? And so I went into my actual podcast and looked through everything that I had done so far, and it wasn't there, and I'm like, yeah, well, go frickin' figure. Which, you know, it's not a big deal. I like this particular subject. I like talking about anyway. I apologize for the low and tired voice. It's morning and I'm just not quite ready yet. I woke up to a snowstorm. Not terrible, but there's like maybe an inch, half an inch of snow on the ground already, and it's still coming down. So, but according to forecast, there's gonna be like a big snowstorm that hits in a couple of days. So. That'll be fun. But in the meantime, a little snowstorm isn't too bad. You know, most people know how to drive in the snow where I live, so it's just I live in a college town, and all the college students that come in the area have, like, not all of them, but many of them have no clue how to drive in the snow. So, like, I'm not concerned about my driving or the driving of anyone that has lived here for a while. But the college kids that are coming from all over the country, all over the world, that have never actually seen snow, they're the ones that concern me. But, it shouldn't be too bad. It's pretty light, and we keep our roads plowed and salted, so it should be okay. I didn't really have any time to play anything between my last podcast and this one, just because things have been a little hectic over the last few days, just trying to play catch up here, but, today is kind of my last day for catch up, and then tomorrow, hopefully, will be my actual, kind of, like, laid back, not as difficult day. So, today I wanted to talk about one of my favorite Western RPGs, Kingdoms of Amalur, specifically Re-Reckoning. And if you're a World of Warcraft fan and you like how it looks and you like in terms of like the world building that's involved in the style that's in the aesthetic style, this is a pretty cool, amazing game to look into. It's an action RPG, so it's not like your MMORPG style of combat where you know the auto attacks and then your millions of icons spread out across the bottom of the screen. There's a couple of cool things about it. You can adjust the how close the camera is in your field of view, so you can even get like pretty dang close to how you like it and how you like to play it World of Warcraft in terms of visual. But the action RPG, like the combat, is some of the best and most entertaining combat that I've played in a while, and a lot of people kind of compare this one to things like Skyrim and Fable, and one of the comparisons they have to Skyrim is how massive the world is, and one of the comparisons to Fable is just kind of the aesthetic-ish, but I think I like the visuals. I do like the visuals of Kingdoms of Amalur a lot more, and the story's a lot more mature than Fable, I think. I don't know. I never really got too much into Fable. I like the idea of Fable. I just didn't really like the execution so much. If you took the scope of Skyrim and, you know, the quest system of Skyrim, and or like a kind of a dumbed down quest system from World of Warcraft, I suppose, and made the combat good, then you basically have Kingdoms of Amalur. So Let me kind of give you a like the history lesson for Kingdoms of Amalur, because the version that we have now is the Re-Reckoning version, which THQ Nordic bought the license for the original and then re-released it. So back a decade or so ago, about 10 years ago, there was a baseball player named Curt Schilling, who's like, World Series baseball player, actually really, really good. Still holds a number of records. He retired from baseball and he's like, you know what? I really like MMORPGs. I want to make my own. And so he founded a game studio called 38 Studios, 38 based on his actual his baseball jersey number. And he enlisted the help of some really big names in the industry. Todd McFarlane, who, if you haven't heard of, Todd McFarlane is been around since like the 80s. He was a comic book artist for Marvel. He's the guy that came up with the Spider-Man's black suit, as well as Venom himself. He's the guy behind Spawn. He, broke off from Marvel, and then I think he worked for DC before he worked for Marvel. DC, the Marvel, and then he broke off and created his own comic book company, and then he started releasing Spawn, which is like that was like his that was like his number one selling comic, and it became like a cult classic, and now everybody knows who Spawn is. Anyway, he's been around for a while, excellent artist, and then he brought in R.A. Salvatore. No, R.A. Salvatore. I can never get the initials right. Salvatore, the guy that wrote The Legends of Drizzt, D&D novel writer. And he actually wrote a number of Star Wars novels that were so good, George Lucas wanted to make them canon. And Salvatore's big forte, as it were, is his world building. That's where he is, like, and I think that's why Curt Schilling wanted to bring him in, because this guy would he'd write entire backstories like about the universe itself and how the world works, and the economies and the politics and the languages and the people, long before he gets to actually writing the story. So he has like this entire sphere, this entire universe to pull information from that correlates with what's going on in the story, so everything, like, he can connect all the dots. So I think that's why Curt Schilling pulled him in. And another big name that he pulled in with for the music was Grant Kirkhope, which, if you haven't heard of Grant Kirkhope, what rock are you living under? This guy's been in the video game industry since the mid-90s. He's a let's see, Donkey Kong Country, Banjo-Kazooie, 007 GoldenEye. I mean, he was involved in Rare for up until they were bought by Microsoft, and even a few years after that. And then he kind of severed ties with Rare, and not like permanently. Now he's just a freelancer. And now, like, I think he still does some things for Rare every now and then, but he's like all over the place. Most recently, let's see, Mario and Rabbids, Kingdom Battle, and its sequel. Oh gosh, he's involved in so many things. The ukulele series. Anyway, so yeah, big name in the industry, and you can even kind of hear. You can even kind of hear like his style, and even though like it's weird because the Kingdoms of Amalur music, it reminds me a lot of like of a Jeremy Soule, but with a little bit of a Grant Kirkhope twist to it. So there's always something, like if you're in a dungeon and you hear like this tiny little jingle in the background while the music is playing, you're like, oh yep, Grant Kirkhope. I know that style very well. It's kind of cool. So anyway, all these big names got involved with the development of the game, and they started with the MMORPG, at least the idea of it, and like a couple of years down the road, well, a couple of years went by and nothing was really happening, and the state of Rhode Island offered a loan of $500 million to 38 Studios to complete their projects, on the agreement that that loan would be paid back. And the idea of the loan was to actually open up jobs for people, particularly in the technology industries. So, eventually they kind of cut off the MMORPG idea just because they're like, okay, I don't think we have enough assets to be able to complete this. So let's take the assets that we have and make our, and throw in some more and make a single player RPG, and then move to the MMORPG after that. And so that's where Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning came from. And the game actually sold pretty well. It sold a few million units. I think around between 5 to 10 million units. I don't remember exactly how many. But in order for the company to even break even with that $5 million loan, they would have had to have sold at minimum between like 150 to about 200,000. And obviously that's counting like developer costs and advertising and manufacturing and like invariable I don't know what the second word is. The invariables in terms of what they have to pay in order to actually maintain keeping the studio and the offices up and electricity running. And that includes some variables too, because those numbers can change. But all those costs, plus $500 million loan, they'd have to cover all those expenses, plus, well, developer costs, I suppose that goes into it, what they're supposed to be paying to the people that worked on it. And they didn't come anywhere close to that, and ended up shutting 38 Studios down, bankrupting them. Kurt Schilling ended up getting sued by the state of Rhode Island for that $500 million, and they ended up settling out of court, and I can't remember what the sum was for that, but it doesn't really matter. Anyway, Kurt Schilling just kind of got in a little bit over his head, coming from one completely different industry to another. I just think he had a lot of dreams and didn't know how to accomplish them, which, that happens to everybody. It just doesn't cost everybody like $500 million. So the game kind of went under, and the IP ended up actually getting owned by the state of Rhode Island. And the game still sold fair, like reasonably well in comparison. Thinking about video games in general, still sold really well. And like recently, a few years ago, THQ Nordic bought the IP for Kings of Amalur: Reckoning, and then it was like, oh, that's cool, but EA still kind of owns licensing for it, right? And EA doesn't really care. So THQ Nordic essentially gained all the rights and rebuilt and remastered the game and started actually adding DLC to it. Re-released it as Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning, history lesson complete. And the game is still selling really well, and it's such a great game. It's so fun, it's so entertaining. The visuals are fantastic. The world is huge and gorgeous, and the characters are so interesting. And the story itself is one of the most interesting aspects about it, I think. Because, I mean, your character is before the story even begins, your character, you die. And then as the story begins, you're brought back to life through like a cross between scientific and magical means. And because you're supposed to be dead, like the entire tapestry of fate, you were no longer involved in it. And so like everybody has like their strings of fate in within the tapestry of fate itself, except your string was cut. And so now a new string is initiated, so to speak, outside of the tapestry of fate. And the way I kind of picture it is like every person that you interact with, your string kind of wraps a little bit around theirs and then pulls it in a completely different direction. So all of a sudden their thread of fate is getting ripped out of the tapestry of fate, and it's now just kind of drifting, and who knows where it's going to lead now. And that's just with every person you interact with. I mean, one of the characters, his name is Agarth, spoiler alert real quick. You meet him pretty early on, and he's a Fate Weaver, which means he can read the tapestry of fate. He can read everybody's individual strings and figure out what's going to happen with their lives. He knows that he's supposed to help this quote-unquote fateless one, which is you. And in doing so, you end up in a dungeon and you come across a troll. He is supposed to get killed by the troll, taken and turned into soup and eaten by the troll. Except that never happens. When you're there, the two of you end up killing the troll, which throws fate out of whack in every direction, which includes like this troll's future family, which is not going to happen anymore. Agarth himself, who's supposed to be dead, but now he's still alive, so now who knows what the freak is going to happen. And it ends up actually breaking his ability to read fate because now he exists outside of it. So, and it's such an interesting concept for a story. It's something that I've never really come across before, at least not in that intricate of a way. Not this intricate form, anyway. So it's so interesting, it's so invert in immersive, and it's just, I don't know, if you're in what's going on with Activision Blizzard, which is total, we're not gonna get into it. Just crap. I feel terrible for some of those people, but anyway, the people that were harmed, sorry. Let me just go ahead and say that the people that have had to deal with that kind of stuff for years, that those are the people that I feel sympathy for. Moving on, what's going on with there and everybody kind of bailing from World of Warcraft because nobody wants to support a company that's letting their employees do stuff like that. If you're looking for a game that looks like World of Warcraft and has really good combat and amazing, amazing world, very good story, very interesting story, look into Kingdoms of Amalur. It is an excellent game, one of my favorites. And every time I pick up and play it, I can just get lost in the world. It's so big, it's so beautiful, there's so much to do. And it's just overall just so interesting. So anyway, there is my fifth or sixth attempt at the Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning episode. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.